This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Tanakh will stand out as shining example to Chazal as to the practice of the middle of chesed. Two characters are as different from one another as day and night. The only thing they share in common is that we learn chesed from both of them. And even that, as we shall analyze this evening, is a very different type of chesed. Avraham Avinu was known as the founder of the concept of chesed in the sense in which we use it in the Torah. He was the first one who made a lifestyle out of chesed. And his efforts for chesed have resulted in it being a foundation of Jewish life ever since. And the second person is a wicked person. And her name was Izebel. Izebel, the wicked queen, Chazal tell us also, we learn Gemilus Chasodim from her too. Where do we really find Avraham's outstanding chesed? Such an extent that Avraham is picked out, chesed is picked out as the middle of Avraham, the characteristic of Avraham. Yitzchak was Gevura and Yaakov was Emes, each one has their own middle, their own characteristic. And chesed is brought as the underlying fundamental characteristic of the personality of Avraham. Where do we see it? We see the way he entertained the three guests. We see how he fought to save his nephew Lot. We see that he was misparal for the salvation of Sodom. One sees the odd expression of chesed. But where do we really see Avraham's chesed as being something which is so fundamental and so basic to the development of the Jewish people? In order to derive an insight into that, we need to study Izebel first, which we already did on one occasion, in part, in the Lady Shir. Chazal say in the Yalkut on Perek Tes in Melachim Beis, Gemilus Chasodim Onu Lemedim Me Izebel. We learn Gemilus Chasodim from Izebel. Izebel was terribly wicked. She was the wife of Achav. She was responsible, Chazal tell us, for the downfall of Achav. She was responsible for all the Avodah Zorah which was taking place in Yisrael at the time of Achav. She was responsible for the extermination of an entire community of Nevi'im and Talmidei Chachamim. She murdered or had murdered Novois HaYisraeli on a trumped up fake trial in order to acquire his vineyard, which her husband desired. She was wicked through and through. And yet Chazal are not embarrassed to say, Gemilus Chasodim Onu Lemedim Mi'Izebel. We can learn something from that woman. Gemilus Chasodim we can learn from her. Ki Beiso Hayo Somuch Lashuk. For her home used to be near the main road. V'chol Meishe Yo'ivei B'Shuk. And every time a funeral passed in the main road, she would go out of her house, and she would clap her hands, and she would wail with her mouth, and she would take 10 steps with the funeral, and then she would go home. And every choson who passed by, she would go out of her house, and she would wave her hands, and she would take 10 steps. And Eliyahu prophesied about this woman, Izebel. Bechelik Yisrael, the dogs will eat Izebel in the area of Yisrael where she killed Novus, in that very vineyard that she stole by killing its owner. There the dogs would eat the body of Izebel, said Eliyahu. Nothing would be left of her. And yet when her time came to die, the Ha'ivorim Shegomlu Chesed, but those limbs which did kindness, Lo Sholtu Vahem HaKlovi, in those limbs there was no, the dogs didn't get any, they didn't get there, they didn't eat. The Nisno Likvuro, and those limbs, her skull, her hands and her legs, were actually buried. It was the only part of her that was left after the dogs were finished her, and it was miraculous that that part was left, and that part was buried. Why, say Chazal, why was that part buried? Because those were the limbs she used for chesed, and not just ordinary chesed, the kind of chesed of which Chazal say we can learn Gemilus Chasodim from her. So perfect was that chesed, so exact and so dedicated was that chesed, that we can learn chesed from that wicked Izebel. That's why those limbs were saved. They were used with Mesirus Nefesh for Gemilus Chasodim. And on the surface it seems a little strange. Firstly, all she did was go to funerals and weddings. Is that the only form of chesed? It doesn't list any other acts of chesed she did, any other acts of kindness. We know she murdered and she robbed, and all Chazal can find to say about her, she used to go to funerals and weddings. That was it. And from that we can learn Gemilus Chasodim. Let Chazal say we can learn from her how to be Mesameach Choson and how to be Melaveh Sameis. Fine, I understand. But Chesed, can we learn Chesed from that murderess, from that robber, from that thief? Can we learn Gemilus Chasodim from her? And secondly, what did she do there exactly at these weddings? One would think if already she's going to a wedding, no, she would take her, be Mesameach Choson the color. And she would go, and she would sing, and she would dance, and she would jump, and she would give a toast, and she would drink a l'chaim, and really make them happy. What is she doing, Gans? 10 steps she walks and waves her hands, goes back. Say Chazal, ah, from that woman we can learn Gemilus Chasodim. Strange thing. You go to a wedding today, and you see people juggling, and balancing fire on their nose, and doing cartwheels, and running here, and running there, doing all sorts of wonderful things. Chazal, don't say about them, oh, you can see Gemilus Chasodim. Izebel, that wicked woman, walks 10 steps with the chosan and kalo and waves her hands a few times and goes home. Oh, from here you can learn Gemilus Chasodim. You can learn how to be Mesameach chosan v'kalo. What does that mean? That's an example of Gemilus Chasodim. This chazal ties up with a different chazal, which appears both at the end of Gemara Makos and it appears also in Gemara Sukkot. And that meant this. Wonderful Chazal, let's learn the whole thing through. Tono de Bei Rav Anan. Was learned to the Beis Medrash of Rav Anan. May dichtiv chamukei yerechech lomo nimshulu divrei Torah ki yerech. Why is the Torah compared in Shir HaShirim to the thigh? Any part of the body to compare Torah to? You want to compare Torah to the head, to the heart? Good, fine. But to compare Torah to the thigh, why? Lo malachot, to teach you, says the Bei Rav Anan, Mo yerech b'seser, ak divrei soiro b'seser. Just as the thigh is always hidden, so divrei Torah should always be hidden. Anything? Says Rashi. Shekovoid ha-toiro b'tzino. For the honor of Torah is with tznius, is hidden away. Now we don't think like that today. We like to think as honor and publicity. We somehow confuse honor and publicity. but it's not so. If it needs publicity, that shows that there's, it's not honorable. You know, in the old days, they never used to advertise banks. It used to be a bazaar, and the bank wouldn't advertise. Never see an advert for a bank. You don't have to advertise the bank. That was always the, you know, whatever the businesses you would advertise, but banks, we don't need to advertise. We're above that kind of thing. It doesn't have to be the Pharisee. Everybody knows about us. But as the moral decadence and set in the banks too, and the standards of professional ethics deteriorated, so the need to publicize and to advertise became greater. Advertising and publicizing is inversely proportional to the covert, to the inherent value and dignity of that which is being advertised. And therefore, the Lolius Yeshev Vashene Begova Shilia. It is not right to sit and teach Torah in the high places of the city. And you don't teach your Talmidim in the marketplace. That's not where you hold your Shiurim in the marketplace. Everything should be Bitzim. And Kol Shchein, that one doesn't teach Torah on the televisions, and one doesn't teach Torah on the radios, and one doesn't go out teaching Torah at the university campuses and all that. You don't go out to teach Torah. You bring people in to teach Torah. It's a different philosophy, but we've been so affected by the secular world that we've forgotten the essentialities of Torah. It says the Gemara Torah is compared to the Yerech because it must always be always quiet, always Bitzino. You don't make a noise with Torah. It's not the, that's not what's intended. The Gemara goes on. And that's the pshat in what Rabbi Elazar said. My dichtiv, what does it mean when it says Higid lecho odom ma toivu ma Hashem derish mincho? He's told you, O son, a man, what is good and what Hashem wants from you. Ki imasois mishpot, says Micho, doing mishpot, justice, as he wants. The avos chesed, and he wants you to love kindness. And to go modestly with Hashem. Asos mishpat ze adin. What is asos mishpat? That means law, din. Be'avos chesed zugmilus chasodim. And loving chesed means doing chesed. Vatznei alechesim elekecho. And what does it mean to go modestly with Hashem? Zu ritzas hameis v'achnosos kalu luchupo. That is funerals and weddings. That's tznius. What does it mean that's tznius? That's gemilus chasodim. Those are two examples we've just seen in our medrash, that going out to funerals and to chasses is gemilus chasodim. So that's a repetition. When the pasuk says you must asos mishpat, you must do that justice, we know what that means. It's din. The avas chesed, that's gemilus chasodim. And what's hatznei aleches, says the Gemara? That's going to weddings and funerals, but that's also gemilus chasodim. What are we adding with hatznei aleches? So we see that Hatznei Aleches is not a third thing one has to do. Hatznei Aleches is the style with which one has to do everything else. So it's Mishpat, that's Din. Gemilus Chasodim is not Din. Din means you've got to do what you're obligated to do. Chesed is doing what you're not obligated to do. That's the difference. And Tznius is the way you do it. But in the way you do it, why is the example given of Yitzas, Ameis, and Achmosis Kalo, of weddings and funerals? So the Gemara Ba'alei Dvorim Kal Vachomer, and from this we can make a Kal Vachomer. Uma Dvorim Shedarko La'asusim B'Farhesia. If those actions which it is normal to do publicly, such as weddings and funerals, Omro Toiro Hatznei Leches, the Torah says walk in Tznius, and Leches, Chazal learned from that, that that means those things about which the word leches is used, going, which is weddings and funerals. So specifically for weddings and funerals, we're told that there has to be a measure of tznius, there has to be a style of modesty. How much more so those things which are done but tznius have to be done modestly. That's the Chazal. What does it mean? Says Rashi, Af shom, even in those things which are public things, such as weddings and funerals, hatzneo, sorry, hatzneo, they need to be done with modesty. How can you do weddings and funerals? Hatzneo, modesty, as we've always said, is a bad translation for the word hatzneo. Hatzneo means to hide. You must hide yourself. How can you hide yourself at the wedding? The whole idea is to be mesameachos and bekalot. You go to a wedding and hide. What kind of thing is that? It's not called going to a wedding. You go to a funeral and hide. The whole purpose of going to a funeral is to give cover to the mess. That you should be there. There should be a lot of people there. Choshuva people should be there. That's all called cover for the mess. How can one hide oneself? Nevertheless, as Rashi, those things too need that snare. How? Lisoid b'midon no. To eat just a little bit. B'lismach b'midon no. And to be happy just a little bit. And not to allow oneself to become light-headed at a wedding. That's Rashi. That's Tznius. Let's analyze that. But Nosson Tzvi Finkel analyzes it in the following way. He says, clearly, what this Chazal comes to teach us is that tznius does not only mean hiding the action. Because the two examples of tznius which the Gemara gives us are examples where you cannot hide the action. And that in itself is the message of this Gemara. That you can act with tznius even in cases where you have to act publicly. There's still such a thing. I was talking today in a shir about the need sometimes to demonstrate. Sometimes one has to make a little bit of a demonstration. Sometimes you have to put your foot down. And you have to say to somebody, if you want to talk Lashon Hora, that's fine, but not in my presence. That's it. And either one has to get up and walk out, or one has to stop the person talking. It's a din. One has to do that. So they asked me, but what about courtesy? Because people think that you're either courteous or you're discourteous. They look at courtesy as an action. Courtesy is not an action, courtesy is a style. One can do good things courteously, and one can do good things discourteously. You can give tzedakah in a discourteous manner. You can say good morning in a discourteous manner. Thing isn't either courtesy or it isn't courtesy. And likewise, one can do bad things in a courteous manner. You can murder a person courteously. The Germans were experts at that. The courteous ways you can say bitte as you usher them into the gas chamber. You can be very courteous. Courtesy is not an action, that this action is courteous and this action is not. Courtesy is a style. And one can murder with courtesy, and one can do mitzvahs with discourtesy. So it is with tznius. Tznius is a style. It's not a question of this is a tzniusdik action and this isn't a tzniusdik action. It's nothing to do with the action. Tznius is a style. You can do public things with tznius, says the Nosson Tzvi. And you can do private things without tznius. It's the way you do it. It's not what you're doing. You can go to a funeral which has to be public. Everybody must see you there. You've got to be seen. That's the purpose of going to the funeral, is to be seen. And it can be done with tznius. You can go to a chasana. The purpose there is to be seen, and it can be done with tznius. And must be done with tznius. How? What does it mean, do it with tznius? Says Rav Nosson Tzvi, there are many parts to an action. An action is not just the end product. If you eat a cake, you think the cake is all you see. But the cake is made up of many different ingredients which are all blended in a particular form to produce that specific cake. And that's why no two women can bake the same challah, even if they follow the same recipe. It always tastes different. Because they're using the same basic ingredients and they're producing the same end product, but it's not the same. Because when you're making an end product out of a lot of different ingredients, one of the ingredients is the personality of the person. And everybody's personality is different, and it expresses itself in a different way. And so while it might, to the untrained eye, the two challahs might look identical, and to the undeveloped palate might even taste similar, somebody who has a bit of a chush will taste the two and will know, no, this is Mrs. So-and-so's challah and this is Mrs. So-and-so's challah. They're different, not the same, even if it's the same recipe. That's why wives have such a hard time soon after they're married. They try all their mother-in-law's recipes and they don't work. And the husband keeps on saying, it's very nice and it's very good, but it's not the way my mother used to do it. And she says, what do you mean it's not the way your mother used to do it? It's your mother's recipe. No, so it's not the way my mother used to do it. Next time she gets her mother-in-law to come and help her and watch over and stand with her, and she does, right to the next time, it's not the same as my mother-in-law, as my mother's. That's how it goes. There's one family I know that for years this used to go on. She used to make a chant, and each time it wasn't the same as the mother, and it wasn't the same as the mother, it wasn't the same as the mother. One day the chant burnt, there wasn't enough water. Oh, he says, that's like my mother used to make the chant. Each one has their own way of making things. And so in an action, while to the untrained eye all these different actions look the same, see, two different people putting on tefillin, two different people keeping Shabbos, two different people davening, it all looks the same, but it's not the same. Every person uses the ingredients in his own proportions and puts his own things into it, and the trained eye will find everybody's action a little different. There are motivations that go into an action. There's thought that goes into an action. There's awareness that goes into an action. All that is critically important. Says Rav Nosotsvi, it's true that these actions, the wedding and the funeral, the end product can't be hidden. The end product has to be public. But the ingredients have to be hidden. What does he mean? There should be no movement of the body. No action and no word which is expressed, the intention of which is self-promotion. That's what it means. You go to a levaya, go to a funeral, fine. Must be public, yes, it must be public. But there should be not one single action which draws attention to you. The purpose of all your actions is to draw attention to the Kovod HaMes. That's what should be conveyed. Nothing to be drawn to you. Want to go to a funeral? Do you want to go to a wedding? A chasna? Fine. You don't have to hide yourself in a corner. You must be seen. The Chosin Kala must have simcha to see you there. Yes. But there should be nothing that you do, no single movement of your body or utterance of your mouth, which is designed for anything but making the Chosin and Kala happy. Therefore, says Rashi, you've got to eat. Of course you've got to eat. Why are you eating at a chasana? Not because you're hungry. That's not a reason. You're not allowed to come to a chasana and eat because you're hungry. Eat at home if you're hungry. The only reason, the only right you have to come to a chasana and eat is because if you'll sit there and you won't eat, you won't give pleasure to the chosin kala. That's all. So what do you do then when the waiter comes around and offers a second helping? You say, no thank you. No matter how much you might be dying for it. Because that second helping is for your stomach, not for the Chosin Kala's gratitude, not for the Chosin Kala's simcha. Doesn't add to their simcha. If you sit and guzzle away, doesn't add to their simcha. They want to see you enjoying yourself. They want to see you happy. They want to see you eating. They don't want to see you sitting at the table and not eating. In fact, not. So you've got to eat. Why do you have to eat? To make the Chosin Kala happy. How much, says Rashi, midonoi, the right amount. What's the right amount? The right amount to make the Chosin Kala happy. Maybe if the Chosin Kala themselves come around and say, please, won't you have some more? And then you must be hungry, you've come a long way, please. We're so worried about you, and you get the feeling they really want you to have more, it's good. So if you have more, even if you're full then you've got to have more to satisfy the Chosin Kala. But it is irrelevant to your own hunger. When the music strikes up, you get up and you dance. Why? Not in response to the music. You get up and you dance only to make the Chosin Kala happy. That's all. That's the purpose of it. No kalus rosh chas v'sholem. No lightheadedness. If you have a little l'chaim, you drink a little bit, only to make the chosin kala happy. Whatever you do is to make the chosin kala happy. That's all. So you don't stand in your own little cliques and have discussions while other people are dancing. And you don't stand out in the foyer and have a drink out in the foyer while the chosin kala in the main room. That's not doing it for the Chosin Kala. There's no tsnius, says the Gemara. This is a public act, it's true, but even in a public act, every part of the act, all the different ingredients, have to be with tzniyus. The end product can't be with tzniyus, the end product has to be public. But all the little ingredients have to have tzniyus. There must be no self-indulgence, no self-centeredness, nothing of the self in anything you do at one of these occasions. That's how it has to be. At funerals, you'll note, they call people up by name to carry the coffin. Why do they do that? So if they're choshev the people there, then it's good to call them by name, because that's called hames. It's good that people should know that such a choshev the person came. The mayor of the town came, they called him up by name. The state president comes, you call him up by name. One of the major gaboyim of the community comes up, you call him up by name. A rov, a dayan, a prime minister, you call him up by name. Fine. But to call every Tom, Dick and Harry by name, why do they do it? So I once asked them, and now they're stopping to do it a little bit, and the elders, why do you do it? To give people kovod, because the Chevek Kedisha used to get income that way. And people used to give more if they felt they had been recognized. But that's missing the point of the funeral. The funeral is not to recognize the living, the funeral is to recognize the dead. Draw away from yourself. Nothing that you do should be with any self-interest. You're not there for the COVID of yourself. You're not there for any indulgence. You're not there to be seen in terms of honor, only in terms of the honor it can bring to the mess. And everything one does at the funeral, from the beginning to the end, has to be in honor of the mess. One finds the way people dress at the cemetery. Why do they dress so peculiarly? I feel comfortable in a safari suit. So I go in a safari suit. You feel comfortable. That's not the way you calculate how to dress when you go to the cemetery. You calculate what is covered for the mess. That's how you do it. A woman goes and she's dressed immodestly. Why is she dressed immodestly? She feels good. She feels attractive. That's not the reason to go there to attract people. You go there to give cover to the mess, and you dress in a way which gives cover to the mess. Everything one does has to be in calculation of cover to the mess. Cover to the mess. Cover to the mess. And that's what Chazal mean when they say that we can learn Gemilus Chasodim from Izevel. What did she do with the weddings? 10 steps, that's all. And waved her hands. Because she felt that if she did any more than that, that would be self-indulgence. Then she's attracting attention to herself. And the purpose of going to the wedding is not to attract attention to herself. That's all. It's that the queen comes and she walks 10 steps with them, that's enough already. That's enough COVID for the Chosam Kala. If she went one step further, she felt there would be no tzniyus. There would be no modesty in the chesed. And that's why Chazal picked these two things that she did. Public acts of chesed, which she did with tzniyus. And that's why we can learn chesed, says Chazal, from Izevel. She knew how to go to a wedding. To be able to go to a wedding and be Mesameach Chosam Kala without attracting attention to oneself, that's a skill which Izevel had. To be able to go to a funeral and show cover to the mace without attracting attention to oneself, that's a skill which Izevel had. And from her we have to learn that. And that's what Chazal mean when they say, Hatznei aleches im Hashem elikecho, zu havayas hamis v'achnosas chosom, v'chalo. That Hatznei aleches, going but tznius, that's expressed in public acts such as weddings and funerals, and from that Chazal make a kal v'chrim. If in public acts you've got to de-emphasize yourself, how much more so in private acts? In things which don't need to be done public, does there have to be a de-emphasization of oneself? You see how far we've come from true Englishkeit. We're getting fuller and fuller, and yet we're distancing ourselves more and more from what the Torah really wants from us. If one goes to a wedding, what does one see? People involved in the chosam kala, sometimes, a little bit, the beginning of the dancing. Very soon it's self-indulgence. It's merely the firm answer to discotheque. It's a way of releasing a bit of energy, the music and the rhythm, that's it. And that's why the bands, with due respect to them, have become so noisy and so primitive. The Jewish bands at the wedding, full of rhythm and noise. Why? Because that gets people going. purpose to dance is not in response to the music. The purpose of dancing is to be mesamech lechosen bekala. The music is only there to assist in the simcha of lechosen bekala. Music should also be with tznius, but it's not. Nothing with tznius. That neither of tznius is lacking. And Chazal says that's what, when Chazal first brought the Tanna d'Bei Rav Hanan and says the Torah has to be b'tznius, v'hayne d'omer Rabbi Elazar, that's what Rabbi Elazar meant with his Kal v'chomer, that if even weddings and funerals have to be b'tznius, how much more so things such as Torah that have to be b'tznius quietly, no publicity. That's the way one teaches Torah. Aye, that means that maybe people won't know about it. Doesn't matter, it will take a little longer for them to know about it. But you can't prostitute the Torah in order to attract the crowds. That's not what the Torah is interested in. It never has been interested in the crowds. That's not what it's for. Sure, one has to open up, one has to facilitate people's learning. Avraham Avinu's home had four doors. There should be no excuse. You didn't even have to walk around the corner. You could come right in. But he waited there for people to come. He didn't go out into the cities and advertise and bring people back with him. No, he waited in his home. And he took the Ovil B'Shovim, people who passed by, he invited in. He didn't go out. All with tznius. Don't advertise Torah, you don't publicize Torah. There's got to be a degree of tznius in the Torah that one learns and in the Torah that one teaches. And in all the mitzvahs that one does, there has to be that midah of tznius. But still it's a little difficult, because then the Chazal should say you can learn tznius from Izeva. Why does Chazal say you can learn Gemilus Chasadim from Izeva? And the main thing she's teaching us is Tznius, not Gemilus Chasadim. No, but there's something more that Izeva teaches us. If your Chesed has to be so circumspect, so reserved, because Chas V'Sholom there should be no self-indulgence, self-promotion in the Chesed that one does. One has to be sure that the Chesed that one's doing is out of purely out of concern for the other and not out of any desire to promote oneself. That means one's chesed has to be very, very subtle. 10 steps at the wedding, wave the hands and home. It's enough already. And each person, that doesn't mean that we too must only go 10 steps at the wedding, but it teaches us a certain attitude. There has to be tznius, that everything has to be worked out, calculated for the purpose of being a sameach lechosen kala only, nothing else. But if it has to be so reserved and so circumspect, how does one excel in chesed? That we learn from the wording of the Chazal. Let's look at that Chazal again. Gemilus chasodim onu lemedim izeva. We learn chesed from izeva. And how does the Chazal start immediately after that? Kola. How does a kola? How do we learn chesed from izeva? Ki beiso hayo somuch lashuk, because her house was next to the marketplace. That's how you learn chesed from Izeva. Why is that important? The marketplace is not a convenient place for a queen to live. It's noisy. There's no privacy. Queens normally live in palaces way off the ground, off the road, with huge grounds in front of their palaces. Not Izeva. She wanted to live on the road. Why? So that she would notice when Chosen Kala came past, when a Levaya came past. She put herself into a position to encounter the opportunity for chesed constantly. That's the Gemilus Chasodim of Izeva. How she did it? She did it with tznius, very subtly. How did she excel in it? By the continuous consistency of her chesed. Come what may, every single funeral that went by, every single wedding that went by, without one exception, she attended. It made no difference if she was in the middle of her baking, or if she was entertaining guests, or if her phone was ringing. It made no difference. Whenever a funeral went by, or a chas v'chosen kala went by, she went out. And that's why she lived on the road. She wanted to be able to do that. That was her chesed. Mesiras nefesh. To put yourself in the position where you will be exposed to the maximum opportunity to do chesed. Ha, say Chazal, gemilus chasodim onu lemedim mi'izeva. We can learn gemilus chasodim from Izeva. That's how you do a chesed. You don't put yourself in a way and occasionally you go to a wedding. When you go to a wedding, if it's a friend. It's a friend you go to a wedding. It says Chazal. It's a friend you go to a wedding. Then you go into the wedding for your own fun. You go to a wedding even if it isn't a friend. Because to be Mesameach Chosen Bekala. Even if it isn't somebody you're close to. If you feel that your presence there will add to their simcha, you go. And if not, you don't go. And so it is with a funeral or a tzorech chas v'sholom. If you feel it's not a question of going only to friends, it's going. And any time that one can add to the kovod ames, I've often mentioned in a community how important that is. That when there are these things, when there are simchas, bris mila, not easy to attend a bris mila. It's during working hours sometimes, in the morning when people are rushing, needs a bit of mesiras nefesh. And then one starts saying, well, I'm not so close to him, he's not my chavrusa, I don't sit next to him in the davening, I don't have much to do with him. Doesn't matter. One goes. One has to go. Chasana, Apidin Abein, Shalom Zocher, all chas v'sholom, a funeral, an unveiling, somebody in the community, the whole community has to be there. That's it. It's hard, it's difficult, but it has to be. That was his ever. And she was able to redeem five of her limbs from the curse of Eliyahu. As powerful as the curse of Eliyahu was, five of her limbs she could redeem. Her skull, because she used it to wail at the funerals. Her hands, because she waved them at the chasanas. And her legs, because she used to walk with the funerals and with the weddings as they went by. That was his ever. Avraham Avinu, Havdil, we find the same. Avraham returns to Eretz Yisrael, and last week said Sedra, and he went in his travels from the south to Basel, to the place where his tent used to be pitched, where he had his home originally. Where was that? Between Basel and the Ai. Between two towns. Why didn't Avraham dwell in the town? Between the towns, halfway house, to catch the traffic backwards and forwards. He wanted to do chesed. And he chose his dwelling place on a thoroughfare, where he would find travelers in need of his food, in need of his lodging, so that he could do chesed. And what happens in today's Sedra, after the destruction of Sodom? Vayisa mishom Avraham atzo ha-Negev. And Avraham went away from there, to the land of the Negev. Where did he go away from? From his original home. Why did he go away? Says the Medrash, "Lefi shecholov mekayim shel Sodom posku ha'ivrim v'ashovim." Since Sodom was destroyed, there were no more travelers on the road. He was on the main road between Sodom and the other towns. And after Sodom was destroyed, the travelers ceased to come. So one would have thought that Avraham would have heaved a sigh of relief. Now we can have some peace and quiet. We can have some privacy. No, Avraham amani mafsik tzedokh mibesi. Am I going to stop looking in my home for 1 minute? Am I going to stop having guests, having travelers passing by? Holach benotolo el bigrar. Immediately he went and he camped in Gerar. That's why Avraham left his place. Because he wasn't able to do chesed. One hears all sorts of reasons that people give to emigrate. But most of the reasons are concerned with their own welfare and their own well-being. Very seldom does one hear about people changing their place of residence in order to be able to do more chesed. But that's when we talk about Avraham as the founder of chesed, and that we follow Avraham's footsteps and we follow his example, that's what we mean. That decisions are taken on the basis of chesed. Why do you live there? Because I can do more chesed there. But look how we've moved away from that. That doesn't feature at all. And so you have young families, you have elderly parents here who are dependent on them. They're emigrating. The young people are emigrating. Who's going to look after the parents? The old age term will look after them. What about your opportunity for kibbud avim, for chesed? No, we've got to make a future for ourselves. That's the way people do. We've got to make a future for ourselves. And there's a complete negating of one of the fundamental values in the choice of a place of residence. Where can I contribute more? Where can I make a contribution? Where can I be a Baal Chesed? Where can I do? Where can I take upon myself the responsibility of caring for others? Not where will I find people who care for me? And that's usually what happens. You say, where are you going? And they say, we're going to Australia. You say, Australia? You're leaving South Africa good. Someone would think, you're leaving South Africa, you'll go to a Mokum Torah, go to Yerushalayim, to Bnei Brak. Maybe you can't make it Panos in Israel, New York, London, maybe, Gateshead. Go to a Mokum Torah already. You're uprooting your family. Surely you're going to a Mokum Torah? No, this is in Australia, there are lots of South Africans. They'll look after us when we get there. Lack of tznius. They'll look after us. Is that what you want in your life? You want to be a recipient of tzedakah? You want to go to a place where you can receive? Or do you want to go to a place where you can give? That's the question. Why do you live in this particular... It's convenient. I live there because it's convenient. There's so many shuls, I can go and daven all over the place. So convenient. You can daven all over the place. That means you don't plan to make a contribution anywhere. You can't make a contribution if you're davening all over the place. You can make a contribution if you're davening in one place. And that's your place, and you help build it, and you help contribute to it, and you help lay foundations, and you're about chesed there, and a gomel chasodim, and a machmus olchim there, and about tzedakah in that place. Then you can make a contribution. You're choosing to live here because there's so many shuls that you can manage to go around to all of them without taking upon yourself responsibility. But that's how we choose residences today. We choose places to live and styles in which to live, which relieve us of the obligation of achrayus. And that means that chas v'sholem, we're not b'nei Avraham Avinu, not in the true sense of the word. To be children of Avraham Avinu, you look around and you say, where can I contribute? Where can I do more chesed? Where can I make my presence felt? Where can I add to the quality of life? That's where I must go, not where I will receive. And where does Avraham settle down now? Avraham out to Negev, and Avraham left there and went towards the Negev. Vayeshev bein Kodesh uvein Shur, and he dwelt between Kodesh and between Shur once again on the main road between two big cities, so that he should have the travels. That's where he chooses to live, always to find the place where he'll have the travels. That's Avraham Avinu, and that's what Chazal meant when they said Gemilus Chasodim onu lemeidim miizevel. We can learn Gemilus Chasodim from Izevel. Not because she used to stand on her head and do cartwheels at weddings. Not because she used to go to funerals and give inflated hespedim and say things which aren't true about the person who died so as to flatter the family. That's not why we can learn Gemilus Chasodim from her. We learn Gemilus Chasodim from the tznius, and her exuberance is expressed not in the act, but in the continuity and consistency of the act, that she chooses her residence on the main road. That's where you see the Gemilus Chasodim of Izevel. That's where you see the Gemilus Chasodim Lahavdil of Avraham Avinu. Where he chooses to live, he chooses situations which will demand contribution from him, which will demand Hachmos HaSorichim and Gemilus Chasodim from him. But the question now emerges, if that's the case, why such a marked difference between Izevel, the wicked one, and Avraham Avinu, the tzaddik? How is it possible that a woman who reached such high levels of chesed and tznius could have dropped to the levels of exterminating the Nevi'im, murdering novice, and encouraging her husband to propagate the practice of Avodah Zarah, of idolatry in Yisrael. What went wrong? Says, it's brought in Evan Shlomo. Very strange, not strange, but an amazing statement. Rav haminim v'hachotim bein odom l'mokrim. Most agnostics and sinners between man and God, most irreligious people, anti-religious people, heim lefi hanire tovim b'teva. They create the impression of being good in interpersonal relationships. And this is part of the methods of the Yetzer Hara, to make them attractive. Because if all the non-frum people were unpleasant people, nasty people, then there would be no challenge to being frum. Everybody would be frum. It would be obvious that's the right thing to do. But it's not so. You find non-religious people, sinners, not just non-religious, anti-religious people, even wicked people, who are so charming. Hitler was apparently a charming person. He charmed many people. He charmed his colleagues. He charmed international statesmen. Whoever came into contact with him went away absolutely charmed. What a mensch. A fine person. Cultured. Sensitive. Concerned about cruelty to animals. Value of human life. His philosophies made such sense. His concern and desire for peace. Remember Chamberlain. Totally charmed off his feet by Hitler. So the Vilna Gaon, that's part of the Tachbulis HaYetzer. Goes together. Wicked people have the ability to be charming. And we see it with his Edel. Such gemilus chasodik, and yet so wicked. Why? Because there's one big difference between his Edel and Lahavdil Avraham Avinu. And that is the part played by the Ribbono Shel Olam in the morality. Norman Lamb once said that G-O-O-D, good, minus G-O-D, good minus God, right? G-O-O-D minus G-O-D equals zero. If you take God out of good, all you left is with one O. The G's and the G's cancel each other, the D's cancel each other out, one set of O's cancel each other out, and all you left with is one other O. In the final analysis, you can't have morality without religion. There's nothing left of it. Because in the end of it, one places oneself up as the arbitrator of what's right and what's wrong. And if one is oneself the arbitrator of what's right and what is wrong, somewhere along the line it falls. And when she felt it was right to murder, she murdered. What Hitler did to the Jews was done because he believed it was right. It was the correct thing to do. I'll go even further, and I'll say he believed it was the will of God. And I'll go even further, and I'll say he did it lishmo. He was convinced he was doing it for the right reasons, and that that's what God wanted. Once one has abandoned halacha, then morality can do and allow whatever you want. There's no limit, there are no barriers to what you're going to allow yourself to do, and to what depths you're going to allow yourself to fall, no matter how moral you are, if an objective standard of halacha is abandoned. Not so Avraham Avinu. His chesed was not an end in itself. For we're told in the Medrash, and and he planted an Eishel, a kind of a tree in Be'er Sheva. What does this Eishel mean? What did he plant in Be'er Sheva? Rabbi Yehuda v'Rav Nachman. Rabbi Yehuda omar Eishel Pardes. Rabbi Yehuda says Eishel means an orchard, field it means. Shal mati shal, ask whatever you will, he used to say to his guest. Ta'inim, would you like figs? Anovim, would you prefer grapes? Rimonim, would you like pomegranates? Or whatever you wish. It's interesting, there's a raya here from this medrash in favor of my wife. We always argue about something and she's right, I see. When she has guests, she always prepares a whole lot of different dishes and then she asks them, would you like meat or would you like chicken? Would you like this vegetable, that vegetable, or that vegetable? Comes with a soup, would you like this soup or that soup? Would you like sweets, would you like cake or this or that? Oh. And I always say to her, you know, for that you could have rather made one selection for each course, and that way you could have enough for three Shabbos. Now next Shabbos you're going to do the same, that means each Shabbos you're cooking three full meals, because how do you know, maybe all the guests are going to choose the one menu, so you've got to have enough for everybody of each option you're giving. Why is it necessary to make so much? And she says that's how she was brought up. That's how you do it, you give the guest a choice. And look, I said, I didn't know where she got it from. Now see, you go from Avraham Avinu, that's where she got it from. He used to offer the matisho to Einim, and no, he didn't used to say, we're having grapes today, would you like to join us? No. What would you like? Would you like grapes? Would you like figs? Would you like remaining? So he always had to have in stock a nap so that maybe all the guests would take the one. Rav Nachman omer Eishel Pundak. Rav Nachman says Eishel is an inn. But also Shoa matisho, he used to ask him to. Igula, would you like bread? Do you want to wash and make mitzi? Do you want challah? Kupa, would you like meat? Chema, would you like wine? Bein, would you rather have eggs? Would you like the parable? Would you like everything? Whatever you want. He used to offer them the choice. And the Medrash goes on to say, when the Shayu Eichlin the Shosim, and after they had eaten and drank, or when they were about to eat, or after they had eaten and drank, Omar Lehi, he used to say to them, Berichu, now you must bench. Giving you to eat, now you must bench. Behinemi, my neighbor. Now it's a bit too late, after you've had a meal with a balabos, you can't say, no, I don't believe in that kind of thing. It's courtesy after all, he's giving you to eat, and what a meal. Now he's asking you to bench, you have no way out. All they could say is, my neighbor, we don't know how to bench. What are you supposed to, how do you bench? So Amalina used to say to them, Baruch Kel Olam Shachalma Mishuloi. That's what you say. Blessed is the God of the world from whom we've eaten. Do you know what he taught them in that one sentence? That there is a God, that he provides food, that you've eaten his food, that you owe him a debt of gratitude, that you've got to be Oved Hashem, that he has a will and that he wants you to do certain things and doesn't want you to do other things. Look what conversation could open up after that. So when they finished saying that, they must have started talking. Do you mean to say there's a God? What is this God? Did he make the food? He didn't make the food. The farmers made the food. No, you go through the whole thing. What the Ribono Shel Olam is? Is he alert? Is this God aware of us? Does he want us to sit a bench? Yes. How do you know? From Sirius. Does he want us to do any other things? Yes. Well, he wants many things. Be'sheva mitzvahs b'nei na'ach. You need to know about these things. And so a whole discussion follows. What set it all off? The menu. The food is what set it all off. The Gemilus Chasodim is only an opening for Avraham Avinu to come to higher things. The Gemilus Chasodim, the Achnasos Orechim, the kindness, was all an introduction to religion. The ethics and morality was an introduction to religion. Once he's there, then it's a different story. If one's using one's ethics and one's Derech Eretz and one's courtesy as an introduction to the Ribono Shel Olam, then one's on safe ground. Then one's not going to misuse it, and one's not going to abuse it. Yitzchok chose a different method to attract people to the Ribono Shel Olam. He did it through his Avoda. Yaakov did it through his Emes. Each one had his own way of doing it. And Chazal say, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Be'ezchel Agoy Gadol, what does it mean when Hashem says to Avram, I will make you into a great nation? Zeu She'im Yem Elokei Avram. That's what we mean when we say it every day in Shemoneh Esrei, three times a day. The Jews all over the world throughout the centuries say, Elokei Avron, God of Avron. That's what it means. Va'avorechecho, and I shall bless you, Zer Shemim Elokei Yitzchok. That's why we say God of Yitzchok. Va'agadlo Shemecho, and I shall make great your name, Zer Shemim Elokei Yaakov. That's when we say the God of Yaakov. Ask the Gemara, Yochol Yuchesbin Bekulom. Maybe the bracha should now end with all of them. Say Elokei Avrom, God of Avrom, God of Yitzchok, God of Yaakov, and then at the end of the bracha we say Baruch Ato Hashem. Why don't we say, ask the Gemara, Mogein Avrom, Yitzchok VYaakov? They were the subjects of the bracha. Let's conclude with all of them. We spoke a little bit earlier about this evening how we say things in the davening over and over again. We never ask, we never think. The Gemara is not afraid to ask a question. Why don't we end Baruch Ato Hashem, Mogein Avrom, Yitzchok VYaakov? No, says the Gemara. Talmud Leimer Veheye Brocho. You are going to be the Brocha Avraham Avinu. Becha Chosmin Vein Chosmin Bekulam. The Brocha ends with you and not with the others. Explains Reb Elie Lopian. What this Gemara means is that it's true that you had one way of attracting people to Yiddishkeit. You did it through Chesed Avraham. And your son Yitzchok had a different way of attracting people to Yiddishkeit, and it worked. He did it through his Avodah. And Yaakov did it through his din, through MS. Each one had their way of showing outstanding qualities which made people say, goodness, if this is Torah, I want more of it. If this is what people who believe in God, I want more of it. Each one had their way. But at the end of the day, Chus Min Becho, at the end of it, the one that has the most impact of all is the method of Chesed. That's the way to be Mekarev people. You want to bring people to Yiddishkeit, you use Chesed. And Reb Elie used to say, when the yeshiva bochrim go home on holidays to their parents, that's the test. If they come home and they turn the parents home upside down, and they don't do this, and they don't do that, and this has to be changed, and that has to be changed, they leave their bedroom in a mess, they show discourtesy to their parents, what do the parents say? Is that what they learn in yeshiva? And if the child comes home, and every time he comes home he shows more courtesy and more sensitivity to the parent, and every time he comes home the parent feels happier and happier, what does the parent say? How well my son's doing at yeshiva. Does the parent test the child to know how he's learning? Does he understand his marashi test? Doesn't test. How does he know? From the chesed. That's how we judge people. And so then he says that's the pshat in this Gemara, that our function is to be mekarev people through the chesed. That's how we have to do it. That's the meaning when we say also the davening, Baruch Elokeinu Shebra'onu Lichvodoi. Blessed be Hashem who created us for His glory. We come back to the tznius. Just as at the wedding and at the funeral, everything we do has to be dedicated to the kovod of the dead person or to the simcha of the chosen kala, so everything else we do in life has to be dedicated to the kovod of Hashem Yisparach. De-emphasize ourselves and emphasize the Ribbono Shel Olam. Then there's tznius. To take chesed, to do kindness, and to show courtesy, sensitivity and warmth, with the purpose of showing people, this is what our Torah teaches, this is how it trains us. Then there's tznius. Then we're showing the kindness and the courtesy and the warmth, and people are saying, goodness, that Torah must have something in it. I didn't know from people could be so nice. That's Kiddush Hashem. And Chas v'Sholom, when the opposite happens, then we have Chilul Hashem. Then it's destructive, then it's exactly the opposite. That's the meaning of Chesed. It's not the big actions. It's not how much we do. It's not how exuberant we are in the expression of our chesedim. What's important is the consistency, that we go out of our way to expose ourselves to opportunities of doing chesed. Not that we do a chesed when it comes our way, but that we go out of our way to expose ourselves to doing chesed. That's the chesed. And when we do it, it's with tznius, ba'atznei alech esem Hashem alekech. As we do the chesed, we de-emphasize ourselves. Very often the chesed has to be public. People need to know about it. Fine, nothing wrong with that. But no self-aggrandizement in it. No self-promotion in it. No self-interest in it. Everything we do is calculated for Kovod Shemayim, to increase the kavod of the Ribbono Shel Olam. If we do that, then it's the chesed of Avraham. If we don't, no matter how well we do the chesed and how much of it we do, there's the danger, chas v'sholom, that it can become the chesed of Izeva, which finds no conflict in going to every wedding and every funeral on the one hand, and murdering and plundering on the other hand. The only time that those two actions come into conflict, if the chesed is dedicated to kovod Shem Shemayim, and everything we do is dedicated to kovod Shem Shemayim, then we can be sure that our actions are going to be directed and guided and controlled by that which in fact increases the glory of Hashem. That there's nothing we do, chas v'sholom, to decrease the glory of Hashem. That all our actions, chesed and everything else, have that middle of tzniyus, whereby diminishing our own self-interest, we are simultaneously able to elevate the Ribbono Shel Olam, and therefore to prove a kiddush Hashem in all we do.